Good morning, and or afternoon, I guess, on this side of the world. And I'm so excited to be here this afternoon to talk to you about an outbreak in a pain management facility that occurred in Tallahassee, Florida. My name is Catherine Kroll, and I'm in the Florida Epidemic Intelligence Service with the Bureau of Epidemiology in Tallahassee, Florida. And I'd like to thank my collaborating authors at this point, Kate Gooden, Marcia Player, and Dr. Marge Kirsch. Without them, this investigation would not have been possible. Although this was a really interesting epidemiologic investigation, the important outcome is the patient outcomes and the severity of them in this case. And we had 28 people who were hospitalized. So just keep that in mind as we're going through and looking at the infection control implications. I have no financial disclosures. The background on the outbreak organism is a Staphylococcus aureus, which is a gram-positive cocci. It's normal flora in the skin and respiratory tract, and it can cause a variety of illness and infections on any of the body sites. Skin are the most common type of infections that are found. Methicillin-resistant Staph aureus has gotten a lot of press in the last year, and I want to be very clear that these were not methicillin-resistant, and these were not skin infections either. These were epidural space infections, which untreated or undertreated became bacteremia. These pain management facilities in Florida are not regulated. They're not required to be licensed as a healthcare facility, and they have the option of seeking certification as a comprehensive outpatient rehabilitation facility if all employees participating in procedures are licensed or certified. This facility associated with this outbreak was not certified, and it would not have qualified for certification because unlicensed, uncertified, non-medical staff performed medical procedures. The outbreak occurred in a small community which has two hospitals, and the infectious disease doctors are shared between these two hospitals, which helped us to identify the outbreak early and probably prevent further spread, which would not have maybe occurred in larger communities and maybe is why pain management outbreaks go undetected. On the morning of March 24th, there was an initial physician report who was the owner of a freestanding clinic, and he reported the outbreak to the Florida Department of Health. At that time, he was aware of 8 individuals who'd been hospitalized over the weekend for illness. And on the afternoon of March 24th, the local county health department, Leon County, initiated a procedure review and initial employee interviews at the site. So through this, I'm going to talk about the investigation, the methods and the findings, and then the implications. What's important here are the long-term implications for individuals who are involved in this. This is a floor map of what the freestanding pain clinic looked like. You can see that on one side is examination rooms and on the other is procedures. There were two main functions that were performed in this clinic: pain consultation and management, and then invasive procedures, injections, that were done on the procedure side. I'm going to now talk about what the employee interviews and the procedure review found at this clinic. There was a lack of documentation regarding specific treatment to clients. They didn't know which room clients had been treated in and which staff were present during treatment. Additionally, there was a lack of documentation on the vials. They didn't know when vials had been opened, how many patients had been treated out of those vials, etc. There was a lack of glove usage when handling the open vials, but also when interacting with the clients. And this was concerning to us, of course, because this is a standard precaution. There were 2 open vials of medication in each procedure room, which remains a mystery to today why you would have that. None of the employees were able to really truly identify why they would need 2 open vials of the same medication in one room at the same time. They reused single-dose vials as multi-dose vials over multiple days without refrigerating them. And finally, their biggest breach in infection control was open vials of medication were combined at the end of the day as a cost-saving measure. So in epidemiologic investigations, of course, your case definition starts as very sensitive and grows more specific. And in the interest of time, I'm just going to talk about what our final case definitions were. So an injection at the clinic that was performed in room 2 with one of the following symptoms not explained by other illness: worsening pain at the site of injection, fever, severe headache, but no laboratory evidence of infection. A probable case is the same as a suspect, but adding the laboratory element in, such as an increased white blood cell count. A confirmed case was one with either a positive blood culture for Staphylococcus aureus, an epidural abscess on an imaging study, or paramenangial syndrome, which is white blood cells in the cerebral spinal fluid. We went about our case finding in three distinct ways. First, the provider was identifying ill people to us who were calling his clinic and saying, "I'm just not quite feeling right." Additionally, hospital infection control practitioners were kept abreast of what the current case definition was, and using that, they reported possible cases to us, and then we reviewed their medical history. Because of the severe nature of these infections, we also felt that it was necessary to call each and every one of the people who was treated at this clinic and establish phone contact, and we did not rest until this was done. So all of these phone calls were made over the course of the investigation. And what made that possible was, at the initiation of this investigation, the media found out about it, and there was huge public outcry and concern, and so an incident command system was set up to help run the epidemiologic investigation, but also so that we could respond to the public inquiries. So we had 97 people who had an injection procedure between 3:05 and 3:20. 53 were seen in procedure room 1, 44 in procedure room 2. About 10 days into the investigation, the provider identified that he had procedure logs, even though he didn't know who he'd treated in which room, didn't keep track of that. He did have these fluoroscope logs, which would be able to indicate who had been treated in each room. So using the fluoroscope logs, we found that every single person who had become ill was treated in procedure room 2. 28 of the 44 exposed were hospitalized. 24 met one of the case definitions. 16 were confirmed by culture PFGE. 20 were confirmed cases. 2 were probable and 2 were suspect. The age of these people ranged from 19 to 90 years old. There were 19 females and 5 males. The onset of illness ranged from less than 24 hours to 15 days, and the time until treatment sought ranged from less than 24 hours clear through 17 days. What's important to note is that these were chronic pain management patients, and so upon their initial presentation at a ED or at their doctor, frequently they were misdiagnosed as just having an episode of pain, given pain management, and sent home. And we had several people who presented more than twice, and on the third time, finally, were identified as being part of this outbreak. So this is our epidemiologic curve by date. And you can see procedures were done on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays in this clinic. 3-5 is where our first case came about. There were procedures that were done on 3-10. However, no one became ill. What's more interesting is if we look at the attack rate. If you can see that there's a very low attack rate on 3-5, and then it just shoots through the roof on 3-12 and 3-13. 3-19 is interesting because of the dip, and we'll talk later of why that may have occurred. So we had environmental samples, nasal swabs, and clinical patient isolates that we used as part of determining what was going on with this investigation. There were 2 vials of Omnipaque from the same lot with bacterial contamination. One had Staph aureus and one had a Brevibacterium, which is an environmental isolate that rarely causes illness. Nasal swabs, 2 of the employees were positive for Staphylococcus aureus, and all 16 of the clinical isolates were pulse field gel electrophoresis matched. So on the next slide, you can see that there's 16 that are virtually identical. Then there's the clinic employees, and unfortunately, you can't see down at the bottom, is the Omnipaque. Now, the Omnipaque did not match the clinic employees, and nor did it match the clinical isolates, which indicates that we know that the outbreak strain was not in that vial of Omnipaque, but that there was ongoing infection control issues in this clinic, and this was not an isolated incident. The doctor, as soon as he heard that there were vials of medication contaminated, he said that's how it occurred, the manufacturer contaminated it. It didn't occur in my clinic. So to disprove that, we went ahead and sent two unopened bottles of Omnipaque from the same lot as the contaminated bottles to the CDC in Atlanta. Both were found to be sterile, but what's more important is we knew Staph aureus could survive, but also it can thrive. The procedure note review was a cohort study, and it was limited by the rubber stamp factor. The physician uses pre-printed notes, which are not patient-specific, and he doesn't adjust them or modify them after doing the procedures, so dosing was useless to us. What was available was the procedure done and the drugs that were administered. What's interesting about this slide is there's nothing interesting. None of the procedures were significantly associated with it. What is interesting, though, is when we look at the drugs of interest. Omnipaque, Naropin, and Kenalog are used in concert in this clinic, and so it's likely that all of those are significant, and it's likely that one of those was causing illness and the others are confounding. Now we're going to talk about what I said I'd go back and talk, the 42%. If you take out procedures that didn't receive Omnipaque, Naropin, or Kenalog, you see an increase in attack rate on that day, which is explaining why we had such a dip before. So pulling it all together, we know that procedure room 2 is where the exposure occurred, and that there are two vials of Omnipaque with bacterial contamination. They didn't know which room these were collected from when we got there to collect samples. They'd already done that for us and brought them all and put them in one place, which was not so effective. Clinical isolates did not PFGE match the nasal swabs, nor did they match the Omnipaque. We had three significant medications, and we had several breaches in infection control, which we knew led to unsafe injection practices. So we think that just prior to or on 3-5, a bottle of Omnipaque, Naropin, or Kenalog became contaminated with the outbreak strain of Staph aureus. This contamination was perpetuated through combining the contaminated vial with another partially used vial, allowing for the perpetuation of the outbreak. What is still a mystery is why nobody on 3-10 got ill. There was a low attack rate on 3-5. The patient from 3-5 had abscesses outside of those where other people had abscesses. So essentially, it could be that this was our index patient and that they contaminated the meds from this patient, and that it was then put into a vial, which was not used on that following Monday, and then was combined and used on the Wednesday practices. So our patient outcomes. The good news is that we had no deaths yet. We have some people who are still very ill from this outbreak. The bad news is that we had 24 hospitalized for related illness, plus 4 unnecessary hospitalizations of worried well. 10 people required surgical intervention with 4 ICU admissions in multi-organ failure and mechanical ventilation. 2 people previously capable of living on their own had to be discharged to long-term care facilities. One of these individuals was a 76-year-old black female, and she actually had abscess from the top of her spine clear down to the bottom, and it had to be debrided in sections and a spinal fusion afterwards. So outbreaks in pain management facilities, there's not a lot of academic knowledge related to them. There's no baseline rate because it's not reportable. But we do know that unsafe injection practices have previously been linked to pain management facilities, including a Serratia marcescens outbreak earlier this year that was linked to Omnipaque injection misuse. The bigger picture is that this facility is just one of 3 pain management facilities in Florida this year to have an outbreak and related to infection control practices. This is the largest documented pain outbreak management in a pain management setting in the country. And there's a growing need for oversight in outpatient pain management facilities, or in outpatient facilities, including pain management. Right now, the Centers for Disease Control is working with CMS to pilot infection control inspections in 3 states. Florida is not one of them, and pain management facilities are not taken under this, so even if this were to occur in Florida, there would be no oversight still. So the important overarching message is that as we continue to move healthcare out of a hospitalized setting and move these procedures, that there needs to have the regulation follow so that these outcomes do not continue happening. This is an unacceptable practice in a setting where it could have easily been prevented through basic infection control. And I'd like to acknowledge the Leon County Health Department and the Florida Department of Health and all of our infection control practitioners and the CDC. Thank you so much for listening today.
So I was right in saying this is going to be the best session so far, and I thought it was pretty grand. So I'd like to open the floor to questions for any of our five speakers, and I would like the respondent to come up and talk through the microphone, if that's okay. Hi. Oh. Yeah. Hello.
Can I ask two questions?
Sure.
First question is for Ms. Kroll. Any ramifications for the physician / prostitute running the...
That is an outstanding question, and I'm glad you asked it. The unfortunate thing is that in Florida, everyone operates under the physician's license in these clinics, and unless something intentionally illegal is done, there's not legal outcome. However, there are a lot of medical bills piled up from these 28 people who were hospitalized, so there are civil ramifications that are occurring. However, from a health perspective, and certainly it would be great if we had the option of pursuing it from that.
I guess that's your that's your question. I'm not too familiar with the detailed statistics, but what we were looking for, or we had reason to think that the survey data would be more accurate. Yeah, thanks for that suggestion, and we'll consider that. But I just wanted to convey that there was reason to think that the survey data would be capturing things that we wouldn't have been getting from the electronic data, mainly the vaccinations that were being received outside the healthcare system. So that's why we use that as our criterion standard.
That's what we're working towards, and certainly our goal, my goal for the next year, is that there will be some sort of more regulated process. As far as the licensing board, it was reported to them, and there were concerns. Of course, this is a highly political process and back and forth, and truly this physician still does not believe that infection control practices caused this outbreak. He had staff who were employees that were coming to us and we were talking to independent of him. And then when we spoke to them, they would tell us this is what's going on. And then when we would talk to him his wife, who is the business manager, who is the unlicensed person participating in procedures, she would say, oh yes, we are combining vials, and he would look at her sideways. So he really, what was going on here is he didn't know what was going on in his clinic. He had left that up to someone who did not. Well, he was performing the actual injection. She was placing HepLocks, and she was presiding over the infection control and the business end, and it was all about cost saving, getting every drop of medication. It certainly is very frustrating, and that is also the case in Florida. The agency that regulates healthcare and the physicians does not regulate these freestanding clinics. Of course, if this had occurred in a hospital, Jayco would have been in there in a heartbeat and pulled provisional licensing, all of these things. And it's extremely frustrating to me as a member of the community and seeing, you know, a 19-year-old girl who had to have a laminectomy. That's extremely frustrating. Someone who was previously extremely healthy aside from some pain management issues due to a car wreck. But yet in Florida, it's the same deal, not regulated.
That was a very good question. Actually, we are thinking, because we have very limited time on this analysis. This is supported by the sand ground, and we need to resume the ground. So we haven't included, I mean, only include like the Townsend Index, kind of like give you kind of flavor of the social status, kind of the showing that. But we are plan to include more of like risk behaviors and also more like social status data, including a multivariable regression model, and to test what is the most important risk factors to determine why the people clusters in that area. Yes, and we also would like to look at the blood group with the highest incidence rate in detail to find out why the people is there. Is there public housing, or is there specific like schools there, or what happened in that blood groups? Thank you.
Are there any associations?
I do want to make, okay. I just wanted to make one comment, which is our first two speakers used theory to guide their analyses, and I thought that was, it's really great to see that. So thank you, everybody, and thank you from the epidemiology section for attending this session today.